Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Morgan Hasn't Seen. Kevin Costner returns. This week, the Kevin Costner series got off to a great start. Last week with The Bodyguard, we sang a bit of Whitney Houston. We cried at some romantic emotion. We cried when we realised the movie at some time forgot to be a romance movie and then turned into just an action thriller. But that was really good as well.
We cried at Costner's terrible haircut.
We cried at Costner's terrible haircut. It will be interesting to see what we think of his hair in today's movie because it's very similar, I think, to what it was like in The Bodyguard. I think it was, but it's going to be an interesting discussion today because I believe this is a movie that you do kind of low-key particularly love, Janine.
Yeah, this was a really early Kevin Costner film that I saw. Like, I saw this movie before I think I saw, you know, Dances with Wolves and some of his more popular, you know, movies. And really just loved the story of kind of this unlikely bond between this criminal and this kid, and this kind of chase that happens and really getting you to sympathize with him, because I think we talk a lot about how Kevin Costner is this, you know, he exudes this likability instantly. So how are we going to like him when he's the criminal who's kidnapped this kid and is on the run? How are we going to like him in this vein? So the film does kind of strategically do some things to help with that. And then Costner just does his thing and makes it work again. So this was just a movie where I really loved the story. It was super emotional, and just great performances and really simple story as well. So I always loved this movie from the first time I saw it.
The movie we're talking about, of course, is A Perfect World, 1993. It's Clint Eastwood who directs the movie. Yes. He's in the movie as well.
Yes,
he is the police chief hunting Kevin Costner down while he's on the run. Or is he more of like a Texas Ranger
kind of like, a very respected, you know, works with the governor kind of lawman, who, you know, people take his word and, you know, he's very much respected in his field. He kind of has to give the reins a little bit over to Laura Dern's character, who comes in as well. Bradley Whitford as like a government agent who's just kind of there lurking and being creepy. He's kind of just like a slithering eel type character who's just there on the side, who plays a very frustrating, anger-inducing role by the finale of the film. I like his role in this film as kind of the leader of this charge, and then kind of how he has to work with the people around him to kind of, you know, catch Kevin Costner. So
I think it's a great example, actually, of, to start us off as we get into our discussion on A Perfect World, I think it's a great example of what Clint Eastwood at his best is able to do as a director, which is have movies and stories that are about kind of on the surface fairly nasty things, yet really bring out the tenderness in them and the sweetness in them. I have always felt like that just personifies or embodies Clint Eastwood anyway. Like, him on the surface is this gruff, nasty, intimidating man.
Yeah.
There is a heart in there. There is a real warm, sweet tenderness in there somewhere. He might not always show it.
Yes.
He might show it even less as he gets older and older and older and older.
Yes. Even this quality, this respect and understanding for another perspective kind of thing as well. Which he really needs to have in this film in relating to Kevin Costner's character. He's kind of one-sided for quite a bit of it. And even in getting the insight that Laura Dern's character brings, and even just viewing the situation by the end, he really comes at it with a lot of respect and understanding. So you really like this character, and you know, he does a good job of, you know, I'm directing this film, but I'm putting myself in enough of it that you see me, that I have a presence, but I'm still free to, you know, go about making this movie the best.
I'm sure I saw something somewhere that he didn't originally want to be in the film itself, to be in the movie. And Costner talked him into actually playing the role that he ends up playing, which I think is a great thing, because what I said just then was speaking to Eastwood, the director, because Eastwood, the director, brings out that sort of hard-edged yet underlying tenderness nature. Yeah. But Eastwood, the performer, when he reaches a certain age and some would say grows out of being cool and action-packed and now just walks around with a scowl on his face a lot of the time, which he does in this movie. I mean, I don't quite think he's reached prime old scowly Eastwood at this point yet.
Yeah.
But he does do a lot of it. Yet the Eastwood, the performer, brings out the tenderness as well. The hard-edged surface with the warm heart underneath that eventually shows itself. And I just think that is Clint Eastwood. I've always thought that is Clint Eastwood. I think some people maybe don't like Eastwood because he is naturally, as a person, kind of gruff and kind of direct in what he's saying. But for, you know, going watching his movies for decades and decades and decades, if there isn't a sweetness within him somewhere, he's been performing that role for 60 years too well. He's a far better actor than we ever thought he was, and he's a great actor anyway.
Yeah.
So it must be real to some degree. So I always like Eastwood, and yeah, okay, some of his movies aren't as good as others, or aren't as, you know, kind of entertaining and highly acclaimed as others. But for watching this movie, a movie I hadn't really heard of, never mind not seen before, you know, you organized this series, learning that Eastwood directed it, being intrigued by that, and then what Costner was doing as the main character, because Costner's quite similar in a way to Eastwood, in that he's rugged but tender.
Yeah.
Although Costner is way less intimidating a presence than Eastwood.
Yeah.
Maybe this has got something to do with Eastwood's natural grim or face.
Gruffness and how he furrows his face a little bit. Yeah.
Nobody squints like Clint Eastwood.
Yes, yeah. And it's very much always a part of an impersonation of him, is the squinting and the
you have to do it. Everybody knows who you're impersonating.
Yeah.
Snarl a little bit, just go and squint your eyes, and that's Clint Eastwood. It's all you need.
Yeah.
It's all you need. But I think that's why this movie seems to work so well eventually, because you're dealing with kind of two different versions of ultimately the same kind of actor.
Yeah.
Even though I think Costner is far more able to be, should we say, romantic, far more able to be quite fatherly and pleasant. But Eastwood's a much better action star, I think, than Costner could ever be.
Yeah.
Really. So there's that's what I mean when I say there's two different,
really interesting juxtaposition with these two actors.
Kind of idea going
on.
Not even that there's a difference there, not even that there's a juxtaposition there. They're just two versions of ultimately the same thing when melded together in a perfect world, ends up just flushing the whole movie with nasty scene followed by tender scene followed by nasty scene, tender scene, nasty scene, tender scene.
Yeah.
And ending up in this place of bittersweet emotion where you begin to really feel for a horrible protagonist, really. He's not a good person. We see him constantly, you know, deceive people. We hear about his crimes all the time. He's very single-minded, yet the child who he takes hostage brings out the heart within him that Costner's obviously really, really able to perform.
Yes, but I think also, you know, getting into the story of this film, they open by juxtaposing him next to someone who is far worse than him. Which just ends up giving him this more moral center amongst the two criminals and already having us kind of on his side, even though he is the criminal, and having us like him immediately because he's far less terrible than the other guy that he's with. So it's him and another guy. They escape from jail and now they're kind of on the lam looking for a car. And they ultimately break into the home of this Jehovah's Witness, because that actually does play into the plot, this Jehovah's Witness single mother and her three children.
I'd like to just nitpick something here at the minute. Well, not nitpick anything, actually. Call out something that is quite hilarious, that they break into a Jehovah's Witness's home when it's usually the Jehovah's Witnesses trying to break into your home, isn't it? Yes,
give you a pamphlet, ha ha ha. But I mean, right off the bat, when they're breaking out of prison, there's already this discourse between the two of them. They already, you can tell they don't like each other. They don't see eye to eye on how to, you know, handle this escape. The other guy is far more violent. He's just quick to attack somebody, kill somebody to get to the next phase of their plan. So there's already this discourse with the other kind of criminal guy rubbing you the wrong way. So you're already kind of warming to Costner. Even in the situation where they do kidnap the boy, the kind of guy that we don't like breaks into the house first while Kevin Costner is kind of looking for an escape for them. And he, you know, gets really gross with the mother and is like trying to, you know, do things to her. And a neighbor sees this. And, you know, when the son does come out, the man is really awful to the boy. He hits him. And then Costner actually comes in, kind of stops his partner from hurting the boy, even kind of tries to have a friendly back and forth with him when a neighbor does try to come in and play hero. And that's when they kind of have to escape and they take the boy with them. And throughout this whole situation, Kevin Costner is talking really friendly to the boy and respectful to him and kind of already making this little buddy out of him, while the other guy in the back is just shooting water tanks and being an asshole the whole time. So
yeah,
the perfect way to show a kind of criminal version of Kevin Costner, who we've constantly talked about is incredibly easy to like in film, is to put him next to someone who is far worse. So we're already kind of on his side and endeared to him, because he's much better and more interesting and more likable and cool than his asshole partner that he's you know, in frame with.
The other guy's totally unhinged, but we might just be seeing two different sides again of similar intention. Costa just might be playing good cop in the good cop bad, or good criminal in the good criminal bad, the bad criminal scenario.
Yes. You know,
when they ultimately want the same thing, or at least we believe at this point they ultimately want the same thing, which is just to escape, get as far away as possible, and do whatever they can, you know, get as far as they can go, which is why they end up taking the boys as hostage anyway, because they want something back. They're not just going to be able to survive
the two of
on
them
on their own.
Yes, they need a hostage to get through the situation.
Yeah, to use it as bait or as, you know, bargaining yeah. tool.
Yeah.
So they need him. So we might think that Costner's just thinking a little more smartly about the situation, but it's still criminal. It's still deceptive. It's still very fundamentally wrong. But we can't help liking Costner because he's Costner. We have to keep reminding ourselves that what he's still doing is still kidnapping a child.
Yes.
And as nice as he might be behaving towards him, the entire movie is still him having kidnapped a child. It's yes. only when we get later on in the movie and we realize kind of why they have developed or why they develop the bond that they do and how deeper it goes into Costner's own childhood and at times his past with Eastwood, who Eastwood put Costner in prison the first time he went to prison and kind of set him on this way of life.
Yeah.
That we learn. It's all really about a father and son dynamic.
Yeah.
And I love that about it because it is not at first clear that that's the case at all.
Yeah.
It grows to be a
theme. And it's definitely this through line theme. You know, Philip, the boy he kidnaps, not having a father, so that yeah. him kind of filling in that role. And the whole reason that he wants to kind of make his escape to Alaska is because of a postcard from his father. So Kevin Costner's character is called Butch in the film. So Butch does have this postcard from his father saying, hey, you know, I'm here in Alaska. I'd love for you to come down here and we can catch up, kind of thing. So the fact that this opportunity, this lost opportunity for a relationship with his father is what's driving him to go to this place after he, you know, gets out of prison, escapes from prison, also plays into that father-son theming that we see throughout with him and Philip. So,
I mean, it's not a fast-paced movie. It's a really kind of well thoughtfully paced out movie. There's few instances of intense scenes going on. It's just really quite quiet a lot of the time and a lot of driving through God nowhere Texas and where there's absolutely nothing and there's just fields or rock or
yeah dust. but even there's this really interesting kind of commentary on what kind of building and developing was at the time, that, you know, there's only so many roads to go down because these developers
We are in the early 60s, I think.
Yes, the developers would start these projects of building roads to places and then halfway through lose funding, not have enough money and not finish the road. So, you know, we run into that as a issue for Butch trying to get to places, and that also kind of not only confusing our cops, our you know, officers on where he could go, but also kind of helping them figure out how limited he is and where he can go because there's all these unfinished roads places.
Yeah.
So I like that that is part of the story and something that was kind of happening at the time. And, you know, just kind of something that is not inherently kind of a big plot point, but something that was, you know, time accurate, time specific, that plays into the plot in an interesting way. So, yeah, you know, that attention to detail like that is always fun to see in a movie that's kind of era specific.
Absolutely. I think I just like the most how it changes in theme almost when it does more clearly become this father-son kind of personal fulfillment tale.
Yeah.
When we realize after a while that Butch doesn't really know how he's going to get where he's going. He doesn't really know which way he's going. Yeah. He doesn't know why he's really doing it. Yeah, okay, he's got this postcard, but this is it's not constantly brought up as this need for him to go to Alaska. He's just kind of he's not really saying much, and he's just kind of going.
Yeah.
And his entire speech is dedicated to bonding with the child, to bonding with Philip. That's predominantly the conversations that are going on. It's bonding moments. It's not, I must get here because of X, you know, which usually in an escape movie, it is kind of that. It's, I must get here, or I must get out for this reason. And right at when we are, and I suppose Eastwood's plan of him and Laura Dern and Bradley Whitford and everybody, although Bradley Whitford's got his own unhinged agenda. Idea. Which also involves being uncomfortable towards Laura Dern, which is very disturbing to watch, actually. I don't like seeing Bradley Whitford in such ways. I mean, I like seeing Bradley Whitford in a low-key evil role. Very good at doing that.
Yes.
He's always very good at doing that. But I don't like seeing him in creepy roles. You know, he's supposed to be nice, surface level nice, but in this, Bradley Whitford isn't even surface level nice.
No,
he's surface level annoying.
Really creepy. He's kind of, he's like a skeezy eel just lurking around, you know, slithering around being creepy and like being quiet. And only when he does finally decide to say something, he's saying some asshole creepy thing. So,
And Laura Dern's already got it hard because Laura Dern is.
Is a woman thrown into the situation. She's like this criminal analyst type person who knows and has studied both of these men, particularly Butch. So she knows his background. She understands how he thinks. She's kind of very studied up on, like, you know, his upbringing and his family life and all of these things about him, and has been tasked by the governor to be a part of this case and kind of give that insight to them. So already she's in the situation when she first comes in, they like write her off as a secretary type thing. And so, you know, we have to kind of jump those hurdles, particularly because it is set like in the 60s.
We do.
But then a great kind of interesting respect kind of forms between her and Clint Eastwood's character, for sure. He even kind of comes in and protects her from Bradley Whitford's disgusting advances. So
I think reasonably quickly, Eastwood is able to go along with Laura Dern being there. Not that this should be an issue anyway, but it is for these insecure law. Officials.
Yes, but I love I love the moment where she's giving her analysis of Butch, and then she talks about how her and one other person are like the two smartest people in this whole situation. And she says one of them, you know, is her. And so then Clint Eastwood, who's the other one? And she says that it's Kevin Costner. So then we kind of already get this setup of her just being this badass amongst all these men, and this understanding of Butch being, you know, pretty intelligent in how he's going about this situation. So it's going to be a rough haul for them to catch him. So they set that up pretty well, I think, while giving Laura Dern this really cool moment.
They do. Look, I mean, this is perfect for Laura Dern as well. Laura, outspoken, clearly intelligent, or clearly the smartest person in the room when everybody else in that room really doesn't think she's the smartest person in the room. She's kind of able to play that role really, really well, yet never come across as holier than thou or anything like that, or annoying or anything like that. Come across as very genuine, very there to do a job, do the right thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Eastwood reasonably quickly grows a lot of respect for her in, you know, or Eastwood's character, I should say. I'm going to refer to people by their actors' names. Obviously, it's me.
Yeah.
Why Eastwood grows a lot of respect for reasonably quickly, because he's very much like that. He's very much, we want to do the job as efficiently as possible. I don't need all these people around telling me what to do.
Yeah.
Why are all these people around telling me what to do? This is really annoying. why have I been given this ridiculous silver shiny motorhome thing just because the governor wants to parade it around in his election campaign?
Yeah.
I don't need this. Why are we taking this? What do you mean we have to take this? Fine, we'll take this, but that's only because I like the governor. We'll deal with it. Don't get in my way anymore.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so annoyed all the time. That's Eastwood in this movie.
Yes, and it works. It definitely works to add a slight layer of kind of comic relief. Also just establishing the character, how he's just no nonsense. He just wants to get to business. It just really shows this competency in his job and where his focus is at. So just little things like that that play to really just building a character in small moments. So we know who they are. We know their motivations and we believe it. So getting little moments like that with him, I think, worked really well to establishing who he is and him getting this job done.
So. But that's an example of, again, what this movie's about, of these unlikely partnerships that form, that create the bond. Eastwood and Laura Dern see similarity in each other eventually, and grow to form a really good team. Yes, okay, it's ruined entirely by Bradley Whitford, but the two of them... clearly are, and you would imagine once the movie's over with, they would happily continue to work well together.
Yeah.
In an efficient way, because they both love efficiency
yes.
so much. They love it.
But they can also give some perspective to a situation as well. You know, they can stand back and readjust and reevaluate how they think about something in being in the situation.
Yeah. Now that's that side of it. What is predominantly our story is obviously the developing pseudo father and son of Costner and Philip, which is a bond that you wouldn't expect a kidnapper to have with a kidnappee.
Yeah.
But that's two of them. Then there's the third one, when we realize or are told that Eastwood has past connections with Butch himself.
Yeah.
So it's all about this kind of eventual reveal of personal connections, and I just really like how the movie takes its time to get where it needs to go. It doesn't hound everything in at the beginning and then you eventually forget about it by the time it's relevant. It brings it in right when it needs to be
when you need to know it.
And again, I keep thinking about it like this, but the movie to me is this kind of embodiment of Clint Eastwood himself, who is just kind of slow, kind of just only does what he needs to when he needs to do it. Nobody walks as slowly and as intimidatingly slowly as Clint Eastwood do. And I think does. And I think this movie is kind of that. It's this slow, steady, intimidating pace of a movie that does the job, gets where it needs to go right at the end.
Yeah.
And that's the best kind of Eastwood movies that do that. Yes, okay, you get the earlier ones, the westerns even, that are kind of, that have their action to them, sure. But I think if you actually want, because it's quite a quiet movie as well.
Oh, yeah.
That if you think about Eastwood, Clint Eastwood never shouts. Have you ever heard Clint Eastwood shout?
No, his gruffness could be misconstrued as shouting, I guess.
It could be, but it's not. He's not shy. He doesn't raise his voice.
No.
He just gets more growly.
Yeah.
And this movie, to me, just seems to be that. Like, it never quite goes full tilt action. It just gets slightly more growly.
Yeah, and even a little bit more elevated in the stakes, in kind of the pressure that's on them. Because let's talk more about Philip and Butch and kind of how that relationship works out. So obviously, we have our, other part of the criminal element just being obnoxious in the back. And Butch really stands his ground in that relationship, the guys in the backseat threatening him, being obnoxious. And very just coolly, Butch has Philip take the wheel, turns around and punches the guy in the face, breaking his nose, yeah, making him bleed. And he's real quiet after that and takes start the gun from him.
Starts teaching him about the difference between a fact and a threat.
Yes, very, very measured scene that speaks to the smarts that Laura Dern was talking about with him. And then they stop to get supplies. Butch goes inside and leaves Philip holding the gun on his partner, who ultimately gets the gun from him. Philip runs away into like a cornfield on the side of the store that they stop at. And he goes after Philip. Butch comes out to see both of them missing. He finds his partner, finds the gun, and ultimately dispatches of his partner because he was going to hurt Philip, which I love that that line at the end, because, you know, he's kind of built up, seen as this criminal kidnapping this kid. But then you remember, he's like, you know, Butch says this in the end of the film. He's like calling out to Philip, I've only killed two people, one who was hurting my mama and one who was hurting you.
Yeah.
So when you think about it, that just adds this whole other like emotional element to Butch as, you know, our quote unquote criminal.
Butch when we might actually be a good man with a heart of gold who's been messed up by a system.
Yeah.
And messed up by those around him.
Yeah.
And it's not actually his fault. And that's kind of what the movie's trying to say on his front, makes his character very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the hands of a lesser filmmaker, could potentially just come across as flat, not really work that much, or feel like an arbitrary kind of twist of nature,
yeah, or
twist of his nature. And it doesn't. And it's because of what I've been saying. It's because of this really methodical approach to the whole movie, where, yeah, things are just pushed in right at the exact right time and just you're guided through it. It's like a walking tour, this movie, yeah, isn't it? Where you're just guided through things and you slowly realize you're actually being told a story here. You're, yes, actually being told about people's lives
and their backgrounds.
Yeah. And it's not quite obvious right from the word go. I love the structure of it.
Yeah.
I really, really do.
Yeah. I mean, and just as they travel, the relationship grows. Like, he learns that Philip is Seventh-day Adventist. Why am I thinking about that? A Jehovah's Witness.
he's not one of those.
No,
he's one,
no,
of those instead. Well, oh, God, it's
that's
all
what
weird.
I was. That's what I grew up as in my early years. So I guess that was, you know, in my head. He learns that he's a Jehovah's Witness, so they don't celebrate any birthdays or holidays. And so he like really sympathizes with him. He's like, that's not fair. Like, you should be able to, you know, celebrate those things just like anybody else. So there's a really kind of cute scene. It's also very, very playing into Butch as this criminal when they do end up, the police find them in this small town where he's buying Philip clothes, because Philip only was kidnapped in a shirt and his underwear and some socks. And
which
Philip
is not appropriate.
Yes.
To be going around in.
And so the cops do kind of try to catch Butch, and Philip is still in the store. He wants to get this Casper the Friendly Ghost costume because he wants to celebrate Halloween at least one time, which is something we established in the beginning of the film, because it was Halloween night, the night, yeah, that you know, all of this goes down. Philip has the opportunity to stay at the store, and like Butch is there in the car like, hey, are you coming or going, kid? And he runs and jumps in the car, so he has this Casper costume. And Butch gives him this really like interesting speech about stealing. He tells him stealing is wrong, but if there's something that you really want that really matters to you, like, I think you can find a way to like justify it, I guess. And ultimately takes him to one house to trick or treat so he can have that experience. So like, they're in the middle of this big escape, cops are on their tail, but Butch takes this moment to let Philip experience trick or treating. Like,
the entire movie.
So many moments like that.
The entire movie is a chase movie.
Yeah.
Yet it's so... It's just so... It so takes its time. And I know that doesn't make sense as a phrase that I've just said.
But a chase movie that takes its time.
A chase movie shouldn't take its time. By all logic. Yet here we have one that works perfectly being both of those things.
Yeah.
Because it's about the bond that's formed.
Yeah.
And you need the time in order to form that bond with all these little moments, like being at this friendly store with the Casper the Ghost costume. Like, you need the moment of Philip choosing to go with him. And there's a couple of different times where Philip actively chooses to go with Butch, and Butch is very much kind of saying to him, it's your choice, man. You know, you want to come or you want to be on your own.
Yeah, I mean, there's a moment where they steal another car, and the farmer whose car they're stealing jumps onto the car, is holding onto it, and Philip bites the man to get him off the car so that they can get away.
But Philip's got no... Philip has no reason to be so good to Butch.
Yeah.
He is being, because Butch is being good to him. And is that not just a really pleasant way of thinking? Like, if you're good to me, I'll be good to you.
Yeah.
I like that. Like, there's no reason in Philip's eyes. Butch hasn't done anything wrong. Butch has never seen, you know, Philip's never seen Butch do anything wrong in his eyes.
Yes, he's so, protected him. He's respected him. He's made sure he has clothes. He's made sure he has food. He's promising him that I'll get you back to your mother. I mean, even from the opening scene together, when his partner is like hitting him and threatening him, you know, he tries to have this nice moment with Philip. Like, here, hold this gun pointed at me, to try to kind of destigmatize the fear of the moment and kind of make a game out of it for Philip. So from the jump, he's been... very respectful to the fact that Philip is a child and trying to care for him in a sense. And I think Philip is just very receptive to that because, as like I said, he happens to be a child without a father who doesn't know a father. So it's a new experience for him. So he's very much open to taking that in and experiencing that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's even more personal and meaningful in that sense, when we realize that Butch is also then doing for Philip what his own father never did for him. Never mind Philip's father, who's not there.
Yeah.
But Butch's father, who wasn't there either.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, being very, very selfless at this point.
Yeah.
Like, he spends the whole movie being quite selfless. We think he's selfish because he's an escaped convict, so he must be selfish. He has to be doing this for a selfish reason. But he's kind of not, because he grows to do it for a very, very selfless reason, and he grows to just try and make Philip's life a little bit better by the movie's end. And that's all he cares about.
Yes, because I mean, not only, like I said, they're on the run, and he takes this moment to let Philip experience trick-or-treating. He finds himself in a situation where he gets to be intimate with a woman, and when Philip kind of finds them and is watching them, you know, Philip ultimately leaves. He could still like finish his hookup with this lady, but no, he goes and he leaves with Philip to make sure Philip's okay, and he even has like a little talk with him about it. So he teaches him how to drive. So he takes these moments to protect Philip, to teach him things, to make sure he's okay. He kind of always chooses Philip above the easier aspect of the situation. He halts their escape to make sure Philip gets an opportunity to do something that he has never gotten to do before. You know, he talks about, you know, that whole scene when he's telling him that he's Jehovah's Witness and he's never gone to theme parks or birthday parties or celebrate birthdays, any of these things. that he's only, you know, seen a roller coaster. He's never gotten to be on it. So he straps him to the roof of the car and has him driving down the road to experience the sense of a roller coaster. Yeah. You know, this is not things they should be doing in this high speed chase when cops are right on their tail. But he takes this time to give Philip these experiences. And then even by the end of the film, the police do catch up with him. And his only demands are for the mother to let Philip experience Halloween and trick-or-treating and birthday parties and holidays.
Those and everybody's very confused at this point. As
yes,
well. All
but
the
those are his demands.
There's police there. I think is the press there as well?
I think there's like state officials? Police now. They're like state police because kind of taking it out of the hands of, I think, government kind of officers are there. It's become this more official thing.
But they are all.
Philip's mother is there, so he makes her promise that she's going to let Philip do all of these things, and those are literally Butch's only demands, and so they're very confused. He even tells all of them, hey, you know, he's like, Philip, put on your mask and try some trick-or-treating again, give him a good scare, and they'll give you some candy. And so he has all of the cops and all the people there wrestle up a bunch of candy for Philip. Like, they are so perplexed to what is happening. So, you know, I love that in between Butch doing these things, stealing cars from people, threatening people with the gun, robbing places, things like that, he's still making Philip a priority in this weird way. So we are wholly kind of in support of this relationship.
It's that thing of prejudging a situation before you actually know it, which is what all these law enforcement and all these government officials and Philip's mother are doing at the very end of the movie.
Yeah,
prejudging this situation, they see a hostage and a hostage taker. We all know what happens in that situation, don't we? But no, they haven't been on the journey we've been on with Butch and Philip.
Yeah, so they don't have any of that insight.
Their relationship. Mm-hmm. They don't have any insight whatsoever. Yes. That's why they're all really confused. That's why they're so keen to get the guns out and aim right at Butch when he's clearly suffering anyway. We'll get on to why.
Yeah.
But he's clearly suffering anyway, right at the end. But it's telling you, if it has a message, the movie, it's telling you to not prejudge situations, to realize that people are deeper than what they first may appear as.
Yeah.
People shouldn't be kind of put into these categories and pigeonholed around.
And situations aren't that cut and dry.
See, exactly. They are more complex than that. They have perhaps emotional reasons behind things, and we should really take the time to understand the why before we decide the what.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is what this movie's all about, is what this movie's very much saying. Eastwood himself, by the end of the movie, the character he's playing, who I don't remember the name of, Red, he's called Red in the movie, very much by the end of this movie, is on the side of, why has this happened? This is very interesting.
This is weird.
I think I might know why this has happened because of my previous interaction with Butch. I think I might have maybe had something to do with this. Am I feeling a little bit of guilt? Yeah, I kind of am. This actually is beginning to make a bit more sense to me.
Yeah.
Let's just take some time.
Let's take a beat and
process all this. Now, whether he's allowed that time or not, he isn't by the end of the movie, which gets Eastwood very mad at certain Mr. Whitford.
Yes.
he isn't allowed that time, but he wants that time at the end, which is the development of Red in the movie to somebody that can
analyze that situation in that moment. Yeah, and realize what's really going on. Yeah.
There's a deeper aspect. It's not as clear as he first thought. But I think the most impactful sequence in the whole movie is when is right before the kind of climax, really, is yeah. when Butch and Philip are taken in by a nice farmhand and his family.
Yeah.
Well, at first they seem nice, don't they? At first he seems quite pleasant. They're sleeping in their stolen car in his field. And he finds them in the middle of the night and invites them, you know, come, we've got a couch you can have.
Yeah,
you
we've
know,
got a cot you can sleep on, yeah.
Stay and we'll give you some food and everything like that. It's fine. They don't obviously don't realize that he's the escaped convict, Butch Haynes, who everybody's okay, been speaking about on the radio,
down the radio.
For days.
Yeah.
But they invite him in and they seem perfectly nice. They've got that farmhand there and his wife and their grandson who's there. And, well, it all seems really pleasant until the farmhand rather violently hits the grandson.
Yeah.
And Butch's entire face change. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Just
I mean,
becomes distraught at this point.
Yes. And then you think it probably plays into some past trauma that he, you know, dealt with. And, you know, the things you talked about with his character being a subject of just, you know, what this world can do to someone, what this world can do to a child in those formative moments and turn them into this person. Because we see him having lovely moments with the grandmother. He's putting on a yeah. record and dancing with her. He tells Philip and the grandson to dance together and everyone's having this really fun moment. And then the ranch hand comes back and he starts hitting the grandson. And then, yeah, Butch just snaps. And kind of turns into the criminal that the radio, that these cops that have been chasing him have built him up to be. He yeah. doesn't
that Philip might have
first thought of him. Yes. So he ends up telling Philip to go get rope out of the car and he ties up the family and the grandmother and the grandson are together, you know, they're praying. He puts tape over their mouth. He doesn't have to hear them. He hits the farmhand and ties him up and tells him, you know, not to be hitting his grandson, to take him and tell him you love him and say it like you mean it. And so, you know, when he, that's what he's forcing this man to do, to, you know, tell his grandson that he loves him. That feels like some deep-seated personal issue that Butch yeah. is working through in this moment.
It's very, very intense as well. I mean, Costner is bringing out his inner Eastwood in this
yeah.
sense. He's bringing out his intensity. His eyes have changed at this point. He has seen red. There's none of the warmth in there yeah. that we've seen throughout the whole movie that yeah. Costner's obviously very good at. He has got one thing on his mind, and it is to beat this man close to
punish
death,
him. Yes.
To
and
punish
it also,
him for treating yeah. his grandchild in the way that we imagine Butch was treated. We yes. imagine he doesn't want Philip to be treated, and maybe, you know, he needed a father there to not treat him like that. So this child is lucky to have a father figure, and this is what the father figure's
doing to him.
This is not yes. okay in Butch's yes. mind.
And on top of that, the ranch hand has also heard the report on the radio and is kind of yes. on to who Butch and Philip are. So in an effort not only to stop them, you know, stop him from saying anything or calling police or whatever, he's also kind of protecting this child because it all kind of comes to a head. He hears him hear it on the radio. They're about to kind of leave, but the grandson wants Butch to flip him. And he's like, come on, yeah. can you just flip me one more time before you go? But then the ranch hand tries to make a move, and that's kind of where the conflict really stirs up. And then even Butch trying to show the grandson that, you know, see, I'm the good guy. Look, and then he flips the grandson a couple of times to show the ranch hand, like, look, you're terrible to this child. He doesn't trust you anymore. Like, he yeah. trusts me. And this whole kind of dynamic.
And this is flipped like that, like he's holding his hands in front of him.
And like flipping him. Yeah.
Flipping him.
Yeah, like playing with yeah. him. Yes. So the whole situation ramps up. Philip is kind of trying to talk Butch out of it. Butch is not listening to Philip at all. He sets the gun down so he can get the tape to cover their mouths. It's looking like Butch might kill them. And Philip gets really scared. So while the gun is on the floor, Philip takes the gun and Butch is kind of approaching him, and in his fear, Philip shoots Butch in the side.
Which is a devastating moment, really.
Yes, because this is somebody who he was growing to love and care about and trust. And when he sees him acting insane in this moment, trying to hurt this family, particularly even the grandmother and the grandson who he's formed this like short bond with,
Who truly haven't done anything
done
wrong at
anything
all.
wrong. Yes. And he's got them tied up and mouths covered, and it's feeling like Butch is going to kill all three of them. Philip gets scared and shoots Butch and runs away. He throws the gun in the well, takes the keys out of the car, throws them in the bushes, and runs off. So Butch goes after Philip, and the cops are gaining on them, and they find out where they are because the ranch hand ends up, obviously getting away and calling the police. The police go to them. Nobody has seen that Philip has thrown away the gun, so they still assume that Butch has a gun. And they now know Butch, the last thing he did was threaten this family in this way. So now they are just in the mindset, armed and dangerous. We got to get him. But they
Yeah,
know
it's
he's
just
wounded.
you now think at this point that that Philip has lost
All love.
all respect, all fondness, all anything like that for Butch. And it is heartbreaking at that point where when he shoots him, because he sees not the same man he's just spent the last 2, 3 days becoming friends with, really. And the terror is back there, and I think Butch comes to realize how scared he made Philip at
Philip,
that moment. But right in that instant, I mean, I'm sat there watching it thinking, I don't know how, how this ends nicely, because if it ends nicely, because this just seems like the end now, and it's kind of bleak, it's kind of
Yeah, because
miserable.
he's
It
shot Butch
might be,
completely through. Yeah,
yeah,
he's bleeding out.
it might be Costner dying. And Philip eventually being found and going back to live, and him having to go through the rest of his life processing this ultimately traumatic experience. But it's all salvaged with another really poignant conversation that Philip and Butch have, when Butch is obviously heavily wounded with from this shot that Philip's giving him. He's not mad at Philip at this point.
No, he's
He's
not.
there lying, sat on the ground. He understands what it must have felt like. And we see that maybe, this has been, as you said, past trauma. Maybe something
That brought
like
this
that
up, yeah.
kind of has happened in Butch's past. We don't know. We're not directly told, but we get the impression.
Yes, and that maybe the man that who hurt his mother was the man who did those things to him, because that's the moment. Philip has run away into this field. Butch is following after him slowly as he's bleeding out, and that's when he does say that line, "I've only killed two people." And he's like, "You did the right thing, Philip. Honestly, I probably wouldn't have killed them, but I know I scared you." Like he's saying all of this to Philip, and as Philip is running from him, and he says, "I only have ever killed two people, the man who hurt my mom and the man who hurt you." So then you're instantly reminded of his devotion to Philip, the fact that, we have set up in our mind, we've been hearing this whole movie from one half, how dangerous he is, but we've seen all these moments of him with Philip. And then he just brings it all home, reminding us that, yeah, he's only killed two people. And the only two people he's been driven to kill are people who have hurt people that he cares about. And so it all kind of comes back in that moment. Philip ends up climbing this tree. Butch can't go anymore, so he ends up kind of slumping down under the tree. Philip realizes kind of what he did. He apologizes for shooting him, comes out of the tree and lays there with Butch, you know, apologizes, tries to get Butch up. Now all the cops are there. They see them. They know where they are. They're waiting for them. We've got the megaphones out to communicate.
The megaphones that don't work to Eastwood's annoyance.
Yes.
There's a lot of that actually in the movie, isn't there? Low key bit of comedic technology use.
Yeah.
When just things don't work. Eastwood, and he just growls.
He just gets frustrated. Yes, it's perfect. So then the mother's there, everyone's there, and it's, what are your demands? What do you want? We just want the boy back. And, you know, that's when he's telling him, let him go trick-or-treating, let him go to have birthdays, let him celebrate holidays, you know, put on your costume, Philip, and scare them and get Halloween candy. And they're very confused, but they're like, okay. And those are literally his only demands. So then Butch tries to hobble along in the opposite direction, tells Philip to go, you're free, Philip, go be with your mother, go towards them. But Philip doesn't want to leave Butch. He follows Butch and he pulls him back and he gets Butch to come with him. He takes his hand. And in that moment, Butch is like, okay, I will give myself up.
Yeah.
So when
Philip turns back around in his little Casper the Ghost suit.
Yes, and runs goes after following him.
Butch again. You get the cut to the mother's face, who is just appalled at this point.
Yes.
Like, why are you going back? What's going on?
Right?
I don't understand.
And
we
know we get this like really sweet, like sing-songy music almost, like when he decides to go with Butch. It's like this uplifting kind of music. And so he takes his bloody hand and takes Philip's hand and he decides to turn himself in. So now here we have like our rational people, you know, Clint Eastwood and Laura Dern, analyzing the shift in what's going on. We have Bradley Whitford there, you know, set up with a sniper rifle, being told, being ordered, do not do anything until I give the word from Red. Don't shoot until I tell you to shoot, because they all still presume he has a gun, is the whole situation. But he's taking his hand, he's walking up. So all of this is already looking strange. Like Butch was going to go one way. He let the boy go free. The boy pulls him in, tells him, come with me. So now you can totally review the context of this situation, but yet certain people are choosing not to. So Clint Eastwood takes his gun off and chooses to come up and actually evaluate the situation firsthand. So they kind of come face to face, Philip and Butch still hand in hand. Red asks him, do you have a gun? He's like, no, my partner here threw it out. He's like, I'm unarmed as well. And all Butch asks if he'll have a moment to talk to Philip, and then you can do your business. You can arrest me, whatever.
Yeah.
So we're thinking, okay, he'll have this moment with Philip. He'll go to jail. He'll eventually get out. And then, you know, he can see Philip again one day, go to Alaska, whatever, you know.
And Eastwood's there to watch all this, to hear all this. So
to witness it,
we know what's going on.
While he does have this gunshot wound, he could potentially survive from it, whatever. So we see him kneel down. He's talking to Philip. He's telling him about his father and why he wants to go to Alaska. My father wrote me this postcard, told me, you know, I could meet him there one day. And so I want you to have this postcard so that you can maybe make it there one day, kind of thing. And he's reaching for the postcard to give it to Philip. And here comes Bradley Whitford. They think he's reaching for a gun. Laura Dern, even from her vantage point, is noticing, no, it's not a gun. Clint Eastwood turns and shakes his head. He's like, I'm right in front of them. It's not a gun. And he's shaking his head. No one is giving Bradley Whitford the word to shoot. But as Butch reaches out to hand Philip the postcard, Bradley Whitford shoots him dead in the chest.
Yeah.
And it's just incredibly heartbreaking. And Clint Eastwood's mad. Laura Dern shouts, no! It's this whole big emotional climactic moment. And here is Philip at Butch's side shouting his name, Butch, no, Butch. It's heartbreaking. And then here comes the mother. She takes her son away, but then he runs back to Butch. He's calling his name. So in this moment, we see an innocent in this moment, Butch dead, Clint Eastwood the look on his face, we just hear these soft, sad cries of Philip, Butch, Butch, just saying Butch over and over again. And we're just so pissed. we're so angry.
Yeah. Yes. I just like, I mean, it's a very sad ending, ultimately. Yet it at least, and I like that it comes from Eastwood. Mm-hmm. It's an Eastwood movie, and Eastwood in the movie gives us just a little bit of actual satisfaction at the end of what is ultimately a really sad ending, when he just kind of storms, as quickly as Clint Eastwood can possibly storm up to somebody, because that's still not quick. That's still quite slow and scowling.
Yeah.
And he just walks back up. I never gave any coal. Smacks Bradley Whitford.
I never said when. Yes, he punches him in the face. Guys have to hold him back, and they're kind of like, well, what was that for? And he's like, I didn't say when.
Yeah.
And then proceeded to also now Bradley Whitford getting kicked in the nuts by Laura Dern. Kneed in the nuts by Laura Dern. So
because
doubly,
because Laura Dern and Eastwood are the same person in this movie. They are now
on the same page. Convinced. Yes. And then all of the agents, oh my gosh, you know, we thought he had a gun. How were we to know? I would have given the word. Like in my head, I'm screaming that Red would have given you the word had he had a gun. And so all of them trying to make excuses. Well, we thought he had a gun. We thought he had a weapon. Da, 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 da. And yeah, that's just, it's just, gets
you. At least we get that little bit of, I suppose, satisfaction of punching Bradley Whitford square in the face.
Yes, yes. And also, you know, before Philip is taken away from Butch, he does go up to him and take the postcard out of his hand. So he will always have that. And even when the helicopter showed up with his mother in it, Butch kind of even tried to build that up as a treat for Philip. Maybe you'll get to ride in the helicopter. And we do see Philip get to leave in the helicopter. So,
yeah. All Butch wanted was what's best for Philip. I hope Philip gets that.
Yeah.
Let's just say
hope
that.
The mother keeps her promise. Yeah.
Probably didn't.
No. Jehovah's strong.
Jehovah's Witnesses tend to be rather persistent. People, so maybe she did. I mean, especially if she's raised Philip as Jehovah's Witness, maybe he's persistent as well. So he's persistent
to listen to Butch.
He's saying, I want to go to a roller coaster. Roller coasters,
yes,
cotton candy, Halloween, Christmas, all these things. And the mother's just like, no, I can't do it. And it's just that endless struggle then. But remember what Butch said. Butch was a criminal. No, he wasn't. He was my friend.
He was my friend. Yeah, right.
You can picture the sequel him there and there.
Bickering at every holiday.
An imperfect world.
Yeah.
That's what the
sequel is. Philip just trying to get to do things. Yeah.
I love it. Why not?
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful movie.
Right? Right. Like I saw this from a little kid and it like captured me, just the story and the heartache of it and the bonds that are formed. And I absolutely love this movie and never really had heard it being really popular or people ever talking about it. So when I kind of curated the series, I knew I wanted to include this because I felt like this was definitely not one. Because I think everything else in this series you've at least heard of or have some vague idea of. And so I definitely wanted to throw something in there that was special to me, that a movie I grew up really loving that maybe wasn't as popular as some of his other things. So,
yeah, it's a great movie. It really, really is. I mean, it's up there on my Costner list, and it can go up there on my Eastwood list for directing, I suppose, as well, which is great. But yeah, such a sweet little movie.
Yeah.
Really, really heartwarming until it's really devastating, but emotionally impactful, actually makes you think about things, you know, takes its time, doesn't. It feels like you can sit with it and allow it to sit with you for a while. And I like it. It doesn't just bombard you with everything. And it feels quite relaxed as a watching experience, which I also quite like. Yay. And I suppose I also quite like, given that I did watch this movie less than 24 hours after I watched last week's main show movie, which was 8.5, which was just the most overwhelming experience possible.
Yeah, so I think you needed a bit of calm.
I really did. But we had a great discussion on 8.5 on last week's episode of the main show. The main show is going to be fun this month as well on the World Cinema series that we're doing. And the Kevin Costner series, of course, that is continuing throughout May on Morgan Hasn't Seen. That is what we have on the show, the It's Wonderful podcast feed, of course. Subscribe wherever you do get your podcasts, on all major podcast platforms. We are also on YouTube, the It's Wonderful podcast YouTube channel, of course. Subscribe, ding your notification bell on there. And if you want to support us on Patreon or donate in any such way, there are links in the description of this episode to go and do that. We would love you forever, much like Philip will love Butch forever. And Butch in the afterlife will love Philip forever, even though they were only friends for 2 days. It felt like 2 days. It might have been 3 days.
Yeah, it might have been a couple days. Yeah.
There's every chance it was 3 days. No more. Definitely no more than 3 days. What else? You can find us on social media. I feel like, you know, I feel like the entire episode, I've been very subdued, very quiet, kind of just slow in my approach. And I think that's just what the movie's done to me.
Yes, it's the movie. The movie has given you that, that sensibility.
The movie and the episode have become one.
Yes.
And I like that. The bond has been formed between the movie and the episode.
Yes.
No, you can, of course, find us on the artist formerly known as Twitter at It's a Wonderful One. You can find me over there at The Purple Dawn with a 3 instead of the E in the because, Janine.
3 is the magic number.
On Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at The Purple Dawn. All your sweet criminal stuff is where.
You can find me at Janine_Devine_ on Twitter, Janine Devine on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. If you want to get any merch for any of our shows, just check the description for the link or search It's a Wonderful Podcast on teespring.com. And if you want to purchase any of my art in print form, you can find that at my Big Cartel shop, g9design.bigcartel.com.
You know I want an Eastwood. It's the only thing.
I feel like my Eastwood's just going to come out like Harrison Ford.
It's gruff enough.
That's literally what I'm hearing in my head. I'm hearing myself trying it and it sounding like Harrison Ford. Like I'm pre-hearing.
Is it sounding like Harrison Ford specifically in The Fugitive?
Yes.
Of course it is. Why did I just know that? Maybe because that's also 1993. Yes.
Our minds are melded like the show is to this movie.
And Butch is to film.
Yes, yes.
And Clint Eastwood is to Kevin Costner. They both also really like Westerns.
They do.
We have a Western next week.
We do.
Open Range. It's going to be great.
It's going to be fun.
3. See. 2.
No, don't look at me.
1.
See?
Okay. Clint Ford, you're welcome. Bye.
Bye. I'm sorry.